Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. What? It's over the bar.
Hello and welcome to the RTE GA podcast. How are you all doing? Mikey Stafford here. So our intercounty teams returned to training on Monday. Well, none of them returned to training on Monday because none of them train on Monday. They all returned to training on Tuesday, but they were allowed to go training on Monday if they wanted. So we thought we'd gather a couple of fine GA veterans and Rory O'Neill to discuss what it is like to return to training as a intercounty footballer or hurler. And we might touch on the issue of overtraining and whether that is a red herring or something that GA needs to be concerned about. So joining me, as I said, is Rory. We've got Anthony Daly and Tomás O'Shea. How are we doing, lads?
Good, Mikey.
Good, Mike. How's it going?
We're all good. Dalo, when you were as a player, if you can remember back then, did you look forward? Were you like a cow being let out of the shed at the end of winter when you go back to training, or were you a little bit more reluctant?
Well, Mike, you'd have to consider now this is very different circumstances that come back the last week in April. Like, it was probably early October with us, like, you know. So I wasn't like any spring calf or anything like that, Mike. I absolutely hated it. But I think at the end of the day, it was probably necessary for the likes of me. And I suppose the worry would, if we ever lived in these sort of circumstances, for a fellow like Gerard Loughnane or Lynn Gaynor, would I be trusted to do the programme at home? And just come in then at the end of April and out you go. Sure, all hurling now are as fit as a fiddle. I probably needed that that slogging that went on, you know. So, look, I presume now, sure, with the technology and everything, they had a fair idea how lads were. So I believe there was a great buzz. I know the Clare Hurlers trained Monday anyway, Mike. So I don't think it was Tuesday. There was no stopping people training Monday.
Oh, no, there wasn't. Just to say that tradition is Tuesday rather than Monday.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday.
How about you?
As much ball work as possible was the attitude. Like.
Yeah. How about you, Tomás? Back in the day, were you keen to get back to Fitzgerald Stadium, or was it a bit of a drag?
Geez, we wouldn't see Fitzgerald Stadium. There's no lights in Fitzgerald Stadium, so we wouldn't see the stadium. Anytime when you were going into the stadium, everybody was a lift for us because you were guaranteed football inside there, and there wasn't much football. I suppose that's. I was reading up there last week and you see everybody was being asked, coaches and managers, and they were being asked what they do when they come back. And sure, it is different. And as Dalo says, they're like, sure, they're going straight into it. They have to be in great condition. I think back in my day, and obviously in Dalo's day as well, it was, you had that 4 or 5 months. Like when I started off playing with Kerry, it was all down to what way you approached National League. And Paddy had an attitude that the National League didn't. It wasn't that he was disrespectful to it, but he just used it to blood players, and he wasn't interested in fellas peaking, or he wasn't interested in fellas being physically fit. So you'd have to, we'd winter well, and you'd always, always come back in not in great shape. And I think that's totally different now. I think players come back and they're ready to go within weeks. And I think that will prove the point. It proved the point last year. They came back and the fitness levels last year were crazy, and they weren't even allowed to train with each other for a long time. But I remember a lot of the time, and that's where the bond is built. So a lot of time you were laughing at fellas that came back in really, really heavy. Like, and I always remember Dara Kaneda. He was bad at the best of times, but when he came back in January, geez, he suffered. He struggled at the back of the runs. Like, and maybe fellas, I remember Eamon Breen, like, he's a plasterer by trade. And he'd come in and there'd be shit hanging off him, like literally concrete hanging off him, like off his ears, and he'd be staring at him. And by God, he'd be up the front. He'd be up the front with William Kirby. I'll always remember, if you could stick to those two fellas, and Dara would always be up the top, no matter what. And they carried everybody else along. And slowly but surely, the team would peak around May. And if you got over the first round of the championship, the fitness built. Like, it was a completely different team, February and July, like. Completely different team.
You'd meet Canada around maybe November and you're having a pint. You said, don't do what you did to yourself last year. Like, you know, I'd be tipping away, do a smile. Next thing you meet him in January, you start shaking your head again. I was usually the Canada. The golden rule with me was once I was ahead of Liam Dyle.
Yeah. Normally. The Canada characters would always say, like, don't, we would have done a lot of laps. I actually enjoyed the laps, like, but obviously there'd be a no-no now. But Kinnaird would be making the argument why the laps were stupid at the time. The fact that he was at the very, very back kind of bolstered his argument. Like he'd be saying, I don't get the point to doing laps. Like, you know, if there was a ball in front of me, I'd be away quicker.
I only need the first 5 yards.
But it is completely different now, Mikey. Jesus, they are like, even at Christmas time there, you haven't obviously in the last 2 years, but you'd see players that you come across. I think they socialise different. I think their downtime is different. I think they come back in better shape. And I think managers at intercounty level, club is probably different, but at intercounty level, I don't think they have to worry about them coming back in good shape at all. Like,
And the gym, Tomás. Let's be saying to us there, you know, you get in the gym, like, and we'd have membership, all right, at some place, but the Sparrow used to go up for a swim to the West County Hotel, like the lads would be inside pumping iron and Sparrow would be inside in the water. Famously, one night, Brian Lohan hammered on the window of the gym and the Sparrow was inside with his goggles on and the swimming hat. And Lohan says, "Hi, in here, like, you should be." And Sparrow just put up the hand like that and flicked the wrist. Yeah, the wrist. Lohan said he was just disarmed straight away.
It's fantastic.
We had the same with the Gooch. We weren't in, and I think it was when Pat Flanagan came in, first of all, and geez, there was a big emphasis on weights and one rep maxes and all this, and we hadn't a clue what was going on, really. It's funny enough, it's actually going the other way now, where there's the body weights, the pull-ups and the chin-ups are kind of coming back in. That's what we were doing at the time. But I walked into the gym one night, and when we were on a holiday, well, it was a team bonding trip, and we had a night out the night before, so everybody was suffering or whatever you call it, and we came into a gym, and the Gooch, of course, the cute bio over in the corner, the Gooch had his own program separate to the whole lot of us, right? Mm-hmm. So I looked over into the corner, and there we were, powering weight, sweat coming down, and the Gooch was over on this machine that you sit, and you just roll, it's like a wheel, like, and he was there over in the corner, and I was looking over, and some fella says, when you can lob the ball over the bar, like that fucker can, you can actually join.
But that's the thing. They come back, and the gym never stops. But Rory, there's no guarantees then, because Aidan O'Shea turned up for training in Castlebar on Monday night or Tuesday night, and he's after hurting his knee. So you can be as fit as you like, but until you get on the field and start twisting and turning, you know, you're not fit. I suppose you're not, well, you're a long way from match fit, but the movement, the rhythm, that kind of stuff, you can't really replicate that.
It's very worrying news coming out of Mayo, I suppose, from their point of view. I think it's probably like, I heard a few dispatches this morning and make reference to the fact that they haven't been given enough time as a lead-in to iron out a lot of these soft tissue injuries that they may pick up now. Who's to say that his is maybe a little bit more serious than that? I suppose that we'll only find out. Time will tell on that front, but it would be hugely damaging for Mayo, given the amount of players that they've lost in the winter, if Aidan O'Shea was to not be available to them for the championship this year. But at the same time, I think, like, what the lads are saying is spot on. They do tend to keep themselves in a lot better shape these days, and they can hit the ground running a lot faster. I think, look, bad injuries can happen at any stage of a player's career. I don't think short lead-ins or mini pre-seasons should be the blame for whatever injuries are picked up. And look, if it's true, it's a real blow for Mayo and a major hammer blow. But I suppose if it was to happen at a good time, now is the time, because at least they can plan in his absence for him. I suppose, yeah. So look, we'll just have to see. I mean, I don't know how the lads would feel. Like, they were all told that they were going to be given 4 weeks. Then the hurlers were told that it would only be 3 weeks, and the hurlers seemed to be happy enough with that, with the extra couple of games that they were being given in the league. I don't know. I mean, I don't really see what, like, I mean, again, I wouldn't have a clue now about this stuff. It's kind of heading into the sports science field, but you would imagine, given the nature of the league to a large extent, where they, certainly in hurling anyway, I think the league will be, even pre-COVID times, the league in hurling there was an element of falseness about it. And it was a sort of it was maybe a little bit of a phony war that was going on with the hurling league, because it had moved to a league-style format in the Championship. So people were basically road-testing game plans, different strategies, and trying to fill out their panels. And I'd say this time around, it's probably going to be more of the same. Mm. I mean, I don't know, Dalo, will they take the league seriously? I'm not entirely sure if they will. If they don't take it seriously, then effectively what you have is an 8 to 10 week preseason before you hit Championship. Now, the problem is, from a football perspective, you only get one bite at that and you're gone.
Yeah, I suppose already they asked the hurling managers, didn't they, whether they'd like to go smaller groups of three or one big group and no league final, etc., whatever. And they all, I think, almost unanimously opted for the 5 games.
Yeah.
So you can be sure there'll be an element of experimentation in every game, I'd say. They'd be really trying. I suppose the counties who have a fair idea, their best 15, you know, they'll probably have seeking to get two more, but some of the counties will certainly be looking, I'd say, to try and get their best 22 or 3 established. Injuries are injuries. I'm not sure, Eamon O'Shea, that could happen anytime. You said it there, I think you're right. And I'd say with the Hurling League, obviously the groups are a bit lopsided, you are looking at them, you know.
Yeah.
You have the 4 Munster teams at Galway, and you feel a bit sorry for Westmeath and that side of it. Mm. The other group, I suppose, you have Clare, Wexford, Kilkenny, the Dubs, and then you have Laois and Antrim. So it might give you a bit more scope, maybe there to look at lads. And I think, Rory, this year there isn't even a league final unless they meet.
Limerick are playing Cork, for instance, on the 5th of June. And they will be due to meet each other in the Munster Championship 3 weeks, maybe 3 weeks after that. Mm. I mean, how serious are they going to take that game?
Ah, look, that'll be phony war. Like, and some people will tell you, we put one over on them and all this. But sure, look, this is nearly the opposite of works.
Yeah.
You know, they beat you and you'll drive your fellas demented for the 3 weeks. And
yeah.
I don't know. I wouldn't take much notice of that one.
Going back to the Aidan O'Shea injury, or, well, what could be an injury, but just that idea, Tomás, when you're running laps for your first probably 2 weeks of football training back in the day, there's less chance of doing an injury unless you run into a hole in the ground or something. Nowadays, I suppose you are relying on lads being that bit fitter, but are people a bit wary because of, as you said, you might be in the gym for 3 months of the winter or like in this unusual situation, but you're not doing the natural movements that you do when you're playing Gaelic football. Do you think lads will be wary for their first few sessions, or do they just kind of go hell for leather if that's what they need to do?
I think the science element of it comes in there, and that's where your strength and conditioning coaches come in. And the good thing about this year is that they have to have learned from last year. They probably went back hammer and tongs last year and tore into it, trying to make up time. And I suppose we're coming from a background where we think in intra-county games that we need our 4 or 5 months build up and we need to be training for this long. And I think last year proved that we don't need to. Maybe we have to tailor the way we approach our fitness, our approach to all levels. Like, do we have to inter-county teams, do they have to train for 4 or 5 months? They get knocked out by a team and they feel maybe that they didn't start early enough. And I think there's a kind of an attitude that they have to do more. And I don't think they do. I think they'll be more prepared this year, Mikey, in terms of they'll learn from last year, whatever soft tissue injuries, that's the word that's being bandied about. But I do think, like, in the National League for football, and I think the hurling is different in terms of the league. The league is everything to a lot of teams in the football. Like, you look at the Division 3 and the Division 4 teams in particular, even the Division 1 and the Division 2. There's a lot of the Division 1 teams do not want to go down to Division 2. You have a watered-down league this year in that you have 4, geographically, you'll have 4 games, whatever it is. So if you're one of the weaker teams in Division 4, and I may be corrected here, but I don't think any Division 4 team won any first round of the Championship last year. The fact that it's a knockout again this year, their season, their inter-county season, even though they must be delighted that they're coming back, is a watered-down league, the competition that they really, really base everything on, that they set their targets out for the full year. That is watered down, and Championship, unless they do something serious...
Yeah, we mentioned that last week because it's Wexford, Waterford and Carlow in Division 4 South. So there's only 3 teams because London aren't involved. So there's only 3 teams. So they have a bye every week. And then, as you say, they probably, with all likelihood, have a 1-game championship as well.
Yeah, but it, like that has to be very hard for them. And then you're trying to drive them on, and you're trying to give it a bit of hunger. The reality is the knockout championship favours the really, really strong. And then you look at it, and let's say, like, you could be talking about it all day, Mike. You could talk about the Ulster, the path that the Ulster teams have. Donegal, for example, are in a preliminary. If they come all the way, compare their path to a Connacht team or a Munster team. And, you know, this it's not like with, like, there's an easier route through. People will argue that the Dubs aren't facing much above. But it is what it is. It is the championship day. I was kind of half disappointed. Is there anything else they could have done? Is there any other format they could have done that could have made it a more fair process? I don't think the provincial in the football is the fairest process that we have. It is a pity. I don't know. Could we have sacrificed? Would teams have voted if they could have sacrificed the league and have a back door? Could it have happened? Could they have fitted it in? I know we're all arguing for the league or for the club, and I'm involved with a club, and it's very hard on club teams at the moment. And geez, I'd be pushing for club teams to come back as soon as possible. There's a lot of other stuff opening up. Would it be safe? The young lads will be back next Monday night. Could clubs get back?
The provincial system obviously is a big hurdle to try and get over if you wanted to free yourself from those chains of bondage. But one of the hilarious things about it, it's not funny now at all, I suppose, but it is kind of funny in one sense, is like the draw in Munster football, and lo and behold, who did Clare draw again? Yeah. Dalo? Kerry.
Well, Colum is not looking that draw.
What was really funny was a few years ago I was producing the actual draw program. Like draws are draws, right? They're not the most exciting things. No matter what you do, you're going to get criticism for them. Saw Breheny out again there this morning and having a go. Like you had it in October. People were complaining, oh, it's too far away. Why are you having it that far ahead of the championship? You have it on Morning Ireland. Oh, people are complaining. Oh, it's lost on radio and you can't see the names. You have it on the TV. Oh, it's boring. It's
because it's such a visual thing.
There's nothing you can do with, like, if you look at the Champions League draw, right? The way they have theirs is the most boring, mind-numbing experience. It's dreadful. So there's nothing you can do with the draw to make it exciting or sexy. And like, I thought the irony of Brenny being able to fill 700 words of a column slagging off the draw should not have been lost on him at all, but it probably was, of course. But the really funny thing was, a couple of years ago when I was producing a program that tried to make it some way more sort of interactive, got a couple of current players, a couple of current managers, and actually got Colm Collins to come up later. And didn't he pull Clare versus Kerry out of the draw himself?
I was there that night.
And when he pulled it out, he looked and he went live on air, oh, Jesus.
Well, the only thing about the draw is this year, Roar, you know, Darren Frehill asked me would I come on and give a comment on the Munster hurling draw, but I was up early like I am every Monday, and it's great to hear Tomás letting us know that the Munster football final would be in Killarney.
Yeah.
In Kerry. It's great.
Yeah. Nice. It's really
being Dalo, I think there was a big if inside there somewhere, surely.
I don't know. That's in Killarney, Darren. Yeah.
No, it is. It is in Killarney.
Tipper the Munster champions, are they?
Well, I was thinking about it as I was... Tipper the Munster champions, yeah. I was thinking about it this morning, like, and I was thinking, in football... And you could ask Dalo the same question in hurling. Who are the teams? Forget about their actual quality. Forget about how actually good are they. Who are the teams that you can actually trust that will compete every single time to the actually ability that they have? Mayo, constantly. They might be the best team, but by God, they get the most out of them. You can trust them that they're going to give it their all. Like, it's not that they're going to give it their all, but that they actually perform on the day. And then you're looking at Dublin, obviously. And then I was thinking in my head, like, would Clare, like back in my day, you'd go in with fear. You'd say, right, you cannot give Clare the hint of belief here. You hit them as hard as you can from the very word go.
Ghosts of 92.
Would Clare, Dalo, right now, Kerry, based on what Kerry have thrown up in the last, and forget about the potential, based on what, can you trust Kerry to come out and perform like Kerry are capable of performing? Or is Colm Collins above in Clare saying, do you know what? It can be easy to lift my lads in a one-off. Look what happened to them last year. Anything can happen. Hope for a bad day. Hope for whatever. do they have an inkling of a chance? And I'm saying to myself, Christ, it do, like, Kerry should win, Dale, I'll say that. Kerry should win. And they probably will win. But at the same time, Clare will think we have a chance. And I think it's just a reflection on...
But you mentioned something earlier there, Tomás, and I think it's an important point. You said, look, the straight knockout format favours the strong. And I think there are two other key factors that will obviously favour the strong counties as well. Number one, last year, the Intercounty Championship was prefaced by the club season first. That's not the case this time round. So the Intercounty have a clear run at it. So you'll basically, like for Tipperary Hurling, for instance, I think they got the McGrath brothers. And I'd say the lads were out on their feet, Dalo, like because they had been going hurling and football for Lochmore Castellini week on week on week.
Painful defeats.
Exactly. So Liam Sheedy will have a clear run with his panel. All the footballers, similarly, you know, obviously, you know, different teams down in Kerry. Like Kerry won a very comprehensive club championship as well. I don't know whether that might have had an effect on the form of the likes of Clifford, because they obviously went. Did East Kerry won it, didn't they, Tomás, last year? Yeah. So, and so that was the first thing. And the second
in Wexford
thing,
as well, were he? Sorry.
Yeah.
Like I think Davey Sartey even admitted that he didn't realise, like, they played off the Hurling Championship first.
Yeah.
David didn't realise maybe how many were committed dual players.
To football, yeah.
Yeah.
And in Wexford, nearly every player is a dual player.
Two clubs aren't dual.
Yeah, so yeah,
it's huge.
You know?
It's huge in Clare as well now. Yeah, like, dual is huge in Clare as well.
And so the second big difference this time round, which again I think will favour the strong teams because a lot of it maybe come back to fitness, is the fact that matches are going to be played on hard ground and in the summer. And there's going to be a faster pace to it. It's going to be obviously a lot quicker to, you know. And I think it'll make for a good championship in a lot of ways. One really funny part of it, though, was after that draw was made and the potential for Cork Kerry in the Munster final was actually laid up. I got a phone call from Pat Spillane, you know, not long afterwards. And he says, Rory, the 25th of July. When's the last time you bet us down in Clarnet? And I said, 95, Pat. Correct. And he said, the 25th of July, it won't be happening either. And he said, but you know what the really shameful thing is? On the 25th of July, the sun will be beaming the stones. Killarney will be hopping. There'll probably be 20,000 Cork people down, all supping pints and Dan Foley's and Dan Lowry's and having the crack. And there'll be 30 gobshites above in Fitzgerald Stadium playing in front of no one.
Well, that's
out the back of Dan Foley's.
Yeah.
that's a story for another day. Just to return to the training then, just for a minute, Anthony, you say because of the way that the hurling championship has gone now, and you're guaranteed more games in a normal year, not this year, obviously. Would that alter training a lot because of how you're trying to peak, and you know you're not kind of building up for one big game, you're kind of building for four games across the course of a month. Did that change things massively in sports science as far as you could see?
I'd say so, Mike. Overall, the round robin is brilliant. I think we loved it. Incredible games, like we went back over the years, like that Limerick Cork draw down the park,
do you remember the Leinster final night when all four teams were like the incredible? Yeah.
And even I was in Parnell the night the Dubs beat Galway, and you know it was highly unlikely that Galway could go out of the championship.
Yeah.
But Wexford and Kilkenny was a draw as well, bizarrely then, like, and they went out, so it was shell shock for the Galway people coming out of Parnell Park. But I think in some ways, like the Munster final was a fixture that maybe it was getting in the way a little bit because we saw how Limerick made hay in 18 coming in third under the radar sort of thing and continuous steady games. So I think last year and this year we're back to where the Munster final is huge for us and we look at it that way. But yeah, Mike, I'd say the round robin, like hurling is blessed in this way. Like Tomás is searching for an answer there to what we could do to, you know, the Dubs, let's say, and compare that to Donegal, like, that's not fair, really.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
Well, hurling is blessed in that we've nearly two conferences now, you know, and the lower levels then are in the Joe McDonagh, they're in the Christy Ring down long, and there's an opportunity to progress. Like, Antrim are back in the Leinster Championship this year, you know, so they won, they got the right to go there, and they're in Division 1A of the league, or 1B, or whatever, they're in Division 1. So, I think we're very lucky with hurling that way, that we have a sort of equal two congresses, if you like, and you know, you have three teams coming out of each. It makes for great competition, and we shouldn't take that for granted. I think that how lucky we are, and I see it with the football. Do you know, I just watch it there and I'd be saying, there's no good until it gets to the semi-final or whatever, the Super 8s, they were calling it. You know, you really needed that kind of quarter-final element with the football, didn't you? Yeah. And I just think we're very lucky in hurling that way.
Yeah. The future, Tomás, it's interesting to talk to you about this, obviously, from your, you know, your teacher and your training underage teams. You're talking about how, you know, inter-county players today, how different they are from your generation and Dalo's generation and Daryl Kaneda's generation, and how you know, how they listen to their bodies, how they stay fit year round. I imagine that's only going one way as well, is it? When you look at the teenagers of today, like I see young lads walking around and like they look like they spend an awful lot of time in the gym and they could be 16 or 17. It seems like that kind of, you know, kind of body knowledge and just like health and fitness is kind of seems to be really ingrained in a lot of, you know, young people these days, and just the impact that's going to have on inter-county football and hurling and all amateur sports, that it seems that like people are being created as athletes in their teenage years now, as opposed to maybe it being a bit of fun when you're young and then you're in school and then you might take it seriously from like 18, 19 onwards. I get the impression that maybe that kind of that start date is a bit earlier now.
Oh, it's weird. That's what the last, I'd say, Mikey, that's there with the last, I don't know how many number of years, like my young fellas inside in a secondary school inside in Cork, and they're predominantly a rugby school, right? And if you saw the gym they'd have, there's certain inter-county teams that wouldn't have the gym they'd have. They're big, powerful men, like. I think it's completely different. But like you look at an under-20 team now, or even look at some minors and the size of them and the physicality of them, like. And you're saying, geez, that's not natural. Like, that isn't. Look at the rugby teams of the past. Look at the rugby teams now. I think of Dara. Our Dara wasn't fully developed until he was about 25, 26. No, he was always big, like, and but he was gangly when he was young. Those lads are coming in physically ready to go for senior level. And look, is it the right thing? Is it the wrong thing? Or is that why they don't enjoy the winters now as much? Because to have a body like that, to put in the work like that, it's a circle that you could continuously talk about. But they're hitting the ground running. And in a lot of ways, they're kind of educating the older lads that were there. And I suppose this full circle has gone now. The eldest lads inside in inter-county teams are of that era as well. So It's just been changed. That's part of it. And in some ways, geez, you look at young fellas and I don't know, are they doing the right thing at all, or what they're taking or what they're drinking, or it's all protein shakes and geez, I don't know. Did you take a lot of protein shakes in your day, Dalo?
Good quality Guinness and Powers and stuff. It's always good, I tell you. Bit of iron to watch.
Jesus, don't shake it though, Dalo. Don't shake it.
If a fella was after putting on weight, Mikko wouldn't say you're after getting fat. He said, Jesus, you got strong.
Will we lose some of the playing population though?
Yeah.
No, I'd have Mark Landers there on my own podcast, and Landers is convinced like that people after the pandemic are going to look at this thing and say, what's all this about? Do you know, there's more to life and that kind of thing. And like, the longer I've thought about it over the last couple of weeks, there's probably something in what he says as well that I think the GA will have a battle there we're going to talk about maybe with the training as well.
Yeah.
That is true, Dalo. But what the one flip side argument maybe that I throw to that is, like, fair enough that I think at the elite level maybe lads might start having serious questions for themselves and say, look, am I really prepared? Am I really willing to be giving up this much amount of my time for what is effectively my hobby? No, that's probably a bit pejorative to describe it as a hobby because it's more than that, but it's not a paid employment job. So, you know, I think that level, maybe fellas might ask questions. I think what I noticed last year with our club anyway, specifically, because we used to have only two adult football teams. We ended up having four last year because there was fellas who just wanted to get out of the house now a lot more. There was fellas who couldn't go to America. International travel was restricted. So there's a lot more lads around the place, and then it wanted, they had energy to expend. And then it was just a case of trying to find a level of football that would be commensurate with a lot of their abilities. And trust me, we were drifting down the junior categories quite a lot at this stage. But, you know, I think in terms of playing numbers, I wouldn't be that pessimistic about what the outcome on the far side of the pandemic might be.
It was just exceptional year, though, Rory. You know, and the club got all the attention, and I saw it everywhere. Like, you know, I have to say, out here in the West, the Shannon Gaels are here, and clubs around me, Cora Clare and Kilmel, but even Clarecastle. Do you know, there was a great buzz every night. You went over to have a look at training, and it's just, I worry about next year then. Like, lads have students that were young last year, they've never got to the States, and we're talking about then starting the championship in July, the club championship in July of next year, maybe mid-July, whatever. Will lads be gone off, you know, travelling and stuff like that if a normal college year takes place, 21-22? Like, I worry next year.
Touching on what Dalo says, I worry for the younger lads. I mean, you're talking about lads there, my own young fella now, he's in third year or whatever he is, and he's back in school, whatever, 2 weeks, and that was since December. They're at home, and because they're on their own, they're not supposed to be mixing, even though they are mixing it now and again. They're not actually part of the training, and it's the weaker lads. You'll always have an under 15 or an under 16 team. You'll always have the 7 or 8 that would be motivated enough to keep ticking over themselves. Then you have fellas at the edge that you have to carry along. Every club needs them. They need to keep the numbers, and you might get 3 or 4 out of a group of 12 that'll make a step up and make huge improvements along the way. But I do think, and I'd worry, like, I'd worry that they, after the year and after not having training and saying to themselves, you know what, I'm getting on grand without this now. I can do without it. I'm not one of the top lads inside there. You know, I don't feel right inside there anyway. I think that's the fella I'd worry about at the moment going back into clubs.
But that's assuming that everybody is happy with how you know, with their new circumstances. Where you could have a lot of people, you could even see the flip side. You could see people who have been doing nothing, never doing nothing beforehand, and they've gone stir crazy at home, and they say, you know what, I might join the local GA club. You know, it could go the other way as well, couldn't it?
We did notice that too. Like, I mean, that was, no, I think Dalo makes a right point that last year it was a novelty to everything that's going on. Maybe there is a level of apathy now, I think. Maybe that has drifted in.
It's hard to know, Rory, but there's certainly new challenges that we don't really know how they're going to pan out.
Correct.
We'll know more maybe at the end of this year. Certainly we know more midway through next season.
Yeah.
Won't keep you much longer, lads, but I did want to touch on, I just saw an interesting thread on Twitter from an SNC coach called Declan Gallagher, who's works with Donegal Physio, I believe, going by his Twitter bio anyway. And he was just kind of tackling the issue of overtraining among GA players, which I think is topical at the moment because obviously 4 counties were caught training when they were being told by the government and the GAA not to train. So everyone said, geez, these lads can't stay away from the pitch. So it's kind of in people's heads that the GAA overtrain, shorter season, etc. And this guy made the point that, you know, compared to professional athletes, it's not even close, because professional athletes will spend days in their training center and they'll have one-on-ones with coaches, they'll have prehab, they'll have rehab, they'll have all this stuff which the GA might do here and there, but it's not like built into every day, and it's only the 3 or 4 days a week. And he made the case of also for, which is also forgotten in Ireland a lot, that because the GA is so ingrained in the culture, that there are individual athletes out there like triathletes and marathon runners and rowers who probably in terms of training hours put any inter-county GA player in the shade, but like it's a solitary pursuit, and they kind of come into the news once every 4 years with the Olympics and stuff. And he just said, and finally he made the point, the amount of training they do, there are definitely going to be coaches out there. There's bad coaches, like there's bad everything. There'll be coaches who overtrain their players. He said, GA players need to do the amount of coaching they do now, because otherwise the game would slow down, there'd be more injuries, and the level of skill would go down, because the main reason to train is so that you can perfect your skill, whether it's the first minute or the 70th minute, and whether you're tired or whether you can't concentrate. That's the whole point of training. So I just thought it was interesting. I just wanted to get your points, your opinions on that. Tomás, let's start with you. Do you think GA, inter-county GA training and club GA training at the top level, are they training too much? Is there a danger of burnout? Or, as you say, people maybe being put off the game simply by the amount of training involved?
Possibly, Mike. I think, look, club teams now, the top club teams train like intercounty teams did in my era, in terms of even the backroom teams, the analysis, every sort of a thing. And that takes time. It takes an awful amount of time. I think intercounty teams basically are training like professional outfits, expecting people to perform at the same levels, putting in the amount of time. And then, unlike professionals, they actually have to work, or they have to go to college, or they have to do other. So it's a time, like, we're either professional or we're not professional. And where I, in my mind, we're putting in professional hours and professional
standards,
strategies and standards, everything, like. And then on the flip side, you have to, something has to give somewhere, like, something has to give.
Like, Tomás, would you reckon Peter Crowley's exit at the age of 30 would have had something to do with the with that, maybe? Or was
he? Definitely, Rory. I'd say there's so many people, but they'd be afraid. There's a kind of, if you throw that out there, I'd like to see players honestly throwing it out there. Like, I went as far as I could. But I was brought up, like, I was brought up, and Paddy was across the ditch. Paddy gave up his job in the guards. I say he was a terrible guard anyway, but he gave up his job. this is the point I'm making. He gave it up because it was interfering with football. He was well ahead of his time. I think something that players don't get, and you hear it bandied about, intercounty fellas, they don't place as much emphasis on rest like professional athletes do, because of the fact that they simply have to work or whatever. Paddy be taking 2 hours a day over in the middle of the day, like every single day. The pub has to be open, Paddy. Ah, fuck it, it's all right. You know, everything was ahead of his time in that regard. And then now I'm thinking, we've got more professional. Everybody's rushing and racing. Players are under pressure. I think the days when fellas going on till 34, 35 is definitely gone. And even before that, you see the Dubs going, you see Peter Crowley going, 30 years of age, definitely plenty of legs in the body. And I think, without people actually saying it out, that is a pure reflection on the amount of time that goes into it, the effort that goes into it. And I don't know, lads, for me anyway, and Dale, it was definitely the same for you, the enjoyment was a huge part of it for me. The enjoyment, the social side of it, the camaraderie. And I'm not saying it's not there now, but like I was saying about the draw there, if you had the draw at 4 o'clock in the morning inside in Copper, it'd be way more interesting than having it away. But I'm just saying, I think it's a completely different game than it was. Yeah. And we're behaving in a professional way when we're not. We're far from it. But I'm not saying we prepare professionally, but we're not professional. And we have to go to work. And obviously, fellas get cranky, fellas get tired. Then you have stresses at home. You have kids. I'd love to see a survey of how many fellas actually have kids and children. What family, or where they work, how they travel. I travel from Cork for my whole career. And I enjoyed it. I actually enjoyed the driving up, like, to get my head straight and all that kind of crack. But there was no fella on the Kerry team ever that survived, even in our time, that was based in Dublin or based outside Munster. Nobody survived.
I think Rory O'Connor said to me that Rory, Dermot and Killian's brother, who was working with us there for a time, he ended up moving on to Sky. Good guy, good footballer too. I think he was on the Mayo panel at one stage. But I think Dermot gave up a good job in Dublin to go back to Mayo, effectively to, I wouldn't say to become a full-time footballer, but to concentrate on football, because he felt that he couldn't give it his full commitment by being based in Dublin.
Just to give it a small bit of context, Mike, as well, though, you know, like, I know it's massive. I get where you're coming from. Like, you know, we could enjoy a National League game and go for a few beers after that. Well, I remember in Gerald McMahon's last year, that's 2000, 20 and a half years ago, we'd one baby and we'd one on the way. And we trained 25 nights out of 27 or 27 days. We trained 25 times. Like, I mean, you think about it, like, that's 20 years ago. But that's because, I suppose, look, Nan always felt we needed to do it a bit different. Now, we two all Ireland's 3 Munsters under our belt at that stage, but we hadn't been great in 99. So he felt one massive push. And that was, we completely bombed out against Tip. We'd no bit of energy. We were flat. And anyone would rise as it would be Tipperary, and we lived down to him. We beat him 10 points. So I think Mike McGurn spoke about this recently. He's with Armagh, and he said this would be his last time involved in intercounty, because he just feels it's gone, fun has gone out of it. And I'd love if someone came along and won the All-Ireland who was in with a chance, obviously, because you're right, Tomás. there's only a certain amount of teams that can win the All-Ireland. Certainly, I suppose in hurling, there's a few more. So I'd love if somebody came along and like had trained Tuesday, Thursday, good session on Sunday. You know, obviously drink sacrifices and things like that. They're all bit of gym work, lads, on the Wednesday night. And say if you found the two teams, Rory, that did the least training in 2020, I'd say it would be the Dublin Footballers, and I might have been contradicted by being caught there late in the gym, and the Limerick Hurlers. Because they're at a stage, they know each other, they're comfortable.
But they have a body of work done that has put their physical conditioning into a good place. I mean, I'd be very fearful of Cork, particularly going in against that Limerick team now, given that Cork are probably going to have to blood a lot more younger players. But to go back to your point there, you'd love to see a team that would maybe be doing it slightly old school. But isn't that part of the criticism that's maybe possibly being levelled at Brian Cody, in that he, from what I can gather, is still very much a Tuesday, Thursday, match of the weekend type man, and maybe a bit of gym work in between, and that he's been depicted and there's certain criticisms starting to be fired at him that maybe he's slightly out of touch and he's behind the curve. But is that fair? No,
I wouldn't say on the training scale, Rory, that there's any criticism. They might be saying that other teams are playing game plans and looking at Limerick with the absolute crowding of the middle with a one guy up there and other runners coming at him. You know, so I think that maybe is the few whispers around that maybe they need something fresh. And I wouldn't say it's Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday. Were they unfit last year? They weren't unfit, like, you know. You couldn't say. Should they came with a wet sail to beat Galway in the Leinster final down the straight?
Yeah.
You know, 73rd or 4th minute. So, like, I don't think that was an issue. They don't quite have the players they had before.
Yeah. The issue here links back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago, doesn't it, Tomas, that the young lads playing, they're not complaining for the most part. They're not complaining for two reasons. A, fitness is kind of their thing and it's something they've enjoyed since they were in school or whatever. And secondly, if you say stop, or you say I can't do the 4 or 5 nights this week, then you'll be dropped and somebody else in the squad will be able to do it. So there's push and pull factors there, isn't there? Most lads are happy enough to do this training. They see it as like one most important things in their life. And secondly, they know that they don't have another option if they want to play the game in the weekend.
Yeah, well, I'd question, like, are they getting 100% out of either then, like? Do you know what I mean? And there's no gauge on that, because who's to say that you could do better if you were working less or opposite-wise? And it comes down then how ambitious you are. And, you know, Jack McCaffrey was straight out, like, he's a doctor, or he's, I don't know, is he qualified as a, he probably is. If you have a tough, like, teaching, I was a teacher, and I can honestly say that I chose teaching. Most of it was because of the hours that it led and the fact that I was off for the summer. If I had it all back again, and if I was, say, don't make the decision based purely on your sport or football, I would probably have made a different decision.
And would you?
I would have made a different decision, yeah. And I'm looking back, and you think about it a lot now, more so when you're finished than when not. Don't get me wrong, I love teaching. I love what it gives me. It's fear satisfying. You love working with young people and it's brilliant and all. But I'd love, these are some areas and you'd look at and you say, I'd love to have given it different. And I'd have fierce admiration. You look at that Dublin team, an awful lot of them are fierce, ambitious fellas off the field. You know, they're high level jobs that take an awful lot of time. And then you question,
but they have a lot more opportunities though as well, Tomas. There's a lot more doors that can open for you. Well, you've got all the finance, the IFSC, and there's lots of industry and captains of industry, and the Dublin GAA scene is a very well connected scene. So there's a lot more avenues that you can meander down into in comparison to, we'll say, rural Ireland, or certainly out beyond the pale, you know.
I think rural Ireland anyway is a huge problem within the GAA, and that's something that you could talk about a day about the issues that are going to arise there. But I do agree with you, Rory. Yeah, but I think more so in, like, Peter Crowley, take for example, is a pharmacist. He's a chemist, highly qualified. They have their own business. There's no way, nobody's going to say, Peter, your business is suffering here because of the time you're putting in, or Peter, your football is suffering because of the time you're putting in here. There's nothing to actually quantify how it's being affected on either side. So you're saying, I'm doing this perfectly. You mightn't, but I don't know how you can do both.
And had he made a full recovery from the injury that he had, Tomás? Like,
but he did last year in the Munster Championship, and I don't know. I presume he did. I presume he's away. He played last year, so I presume the year after would have been the year that he would have benefited most. From what I understand, they tried for a long time to keep him involved. I think he had this decision made possibly earlier. It's a very, very tough time in general with the pandemic and all that. And the point was made earlier. I don't know who made it. It's maybe easier to walk away and say, you know what, there's more things to life. That's one thing the pandemic threw up, possibly appreciation of other things. And I don't know. It comes down to me. I do everything and my head will be completely different to the next man's head. If I missed training, one training back in the day, I'd be told about it by family anyway, but it would eat me for 3 or 4 weeks if I missed one day, and I'd be eating myself. And I think then a fella said, look, so you have a problem, kid. Your thinking is off the charts. I'd be 100% this way, and I wouldn't really care what's happening here. And the difference, you sure you have to care what's happening here. And the imbalance was wrong, like. So I think more players now are more aware of that. And I don't think you'll have the fellas given the full commitment, even though...
It'll mean shorter careers, won't it?
Shorter careers, like. And you want to give the best, like. But there's an awful amount of pressure. Dale, you've been closest to inter-county. And if you went back into it now, like for a player, and all the numbers are bounced around, it's a fair commitment, isn't it? Even though they'd love it.
Oh, yeah, unbelievable. Like,
What age is Keeney? Keeney retired there recently, Dale.
38. And killing him to retire.
But that's freakish, though, isn't it? That's a bit freakish.
Game on last night, John Conlon, on like coming back from the Crusaders, and he said he was like the cattle being let out of the sheds Monday evening for training. But he said the problem was low and had a fitness test organised. He said, you know, John is 32, and a lot of people might have said now with him with a Crusaders, would he say, look, and he won his All Ireland, he's his National League. Do you know, would he just, and goes down as a bit of a legend in Clare, great guy, he's given a massive service, probably 11, 12 years now on the senior team. But he can't wait, like, and wants a few more years out of it. So, but they are becoming fewer, Tomás, that's what I'd say.
The inter-county player in his 30s is becoming not a rarity, but it used to be expected that you guys would play on into your mid-30s as long as you were getting picked and as long as you were getting on the panel. That's not the case now, where, you know, 30 seems to be a fairly... a common cutoff. If there's, obviously it's not a one size fits all. Anyway, lads, that was an interesting chat considering we ain't got a whole lot to talk about other than lads going back training. No. So thanks very much for that. I hope people enjoyed listening to it. And we'll be back next week. And don't forget, we've got three other RT Sport podcasts, soccer podcast, rugby podcast, Marie Crowe's We Become Heroes, where she chats to Irish sports people about how they became sports people. These two lads, I'll put Marie in contact. And it sounds like, or maybe Daryl Canada would be the interview to get for that. I think.
He's a man.
All right. We'll catch you all next week. Thanks very much. See you.
Cheers, lads. Thanks.
Cheers, guys. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a
point. There's the whistle. It's over. It's over. We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it! He hits it! It's over the bar! Oh! Holy Moses!